tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Francis Alonso reporting. Congolese politician Jean-Pierre Bemba and his former trial lawyer Aimé Kilolo Musemba have pleaded not guilty at the start of their trial at the International Criminal Court in The Hague Tuesday. The former Congo vice president, Musamba, and three other allies have been charged with corrupting witnesses and interfering with the administration of justice. This is the ICC chief prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda.
We will demonstrate on the strength of our evidence how the accused engaged in a scheme to corruptly influence witnesses, to bribe them, to encourage or induce their false testimony, to coach their evidence illicitly, and to present that false evidence to a chamber of this court.
Bemba is already on trial at the court for crimes against humanity and war crimes. Musamba is accused of coaching witnesses and paying them to testify in his favor between 2011 and 2013. Burkina Faso's army has blocked roads around the presidential guards camp in the capital. It comes a day after the guard is refusing to disarm following a failed coup. Journalist Emily Iob, reporting for VOA in Ouagadougou, says she witnessed soldiers erecting barricades Tuesday on several streets leading to the camps. Violence erupted Tuesday across the West Bank between the Israeli army and Palestinian youth protesting against recent confrontations in Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa compound. In the West Bank cities of Ramallah, Bethlehem, and Hebron, Palestinian youth hurled stones at Israeli soldiers and troops, fired tear gas. No injuries or arrests were initially reported. VOA News. More than 500,000 migrants have now made the perilous Mediterranean Sea crossing this year in search of a new life in Europe, according to the United Nations Refugee Agency Tuesday. The UN said nearly 515,000 asylum seekers have left war and poverty in the Middle East and Africa since January, with 383,000 reaching the shores of Greece and another 129,000 landing in Italy. More than half of those headed to Europe have come from Syria, like this Rami, who is 27 years old.
We're looking for a life, not for money, not for anything else, just for a good life. Yeah, that's it.
Rami is one of many who have recently migrated to Hungary and Austria on foot Tuesday in search of what they call a better future. There were fresh reports of clashes Tuesday in the northern Afghan city of Kunduz. It's the first major city the Taliban has captured since being ousted from power in 2001. Security forces surrounding the city began attempts to wrest control from the insurgents, whose offensive drew alarm and condemnation from Afghan and UN officials. A statement from Afghanistan's defense ministry said troops had retaken the police headquarters and the city prison, while NATO said the U.S. military carried out an airstrike in the area. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility for gunning down an Italian aid worker in the diplomatic quarter of Bangladesh's capital. The claim by the Sunni extremist group cannot be independently verified. The country's home minister, Azizuddin Khan, said that authorities have found no evidence that the Islamic State was linked to the killing. Police have said earlier there were no leads in tracing the assailants, who are riding on a motorcycle, drove up alongside the Italian citizen Cesare Tavella and shot him Monday night. Helen Vanderbeek is the director of the Organization for Development Cooperation.
We have contact with the police. The police is investigating the case. A case has been filed, and we now have to wait for the police to come up with their conclusions.
Meanwhile, Italy's foreign minister in New York Monday evening said they are working to verify the Islamic State's claim. The U.S. Senate is expected to approve a temporary spending bill Tuesday that will keep the federal government operating until mid-December, putting off yet another Republican showdown with President Barack Obama over spending priorities. Tuesday's expected vote comes after the chamber voted 77-19 Monday to advance the measure towards a final vote. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiyas Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
UN agencies are warning of a resurgence in widespread ethnic and religious fighting in Central African Republic following the recent outbreak of fighting, which has left dozens dead and scores injured in the capital, Bangui.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, President Obama says the U.S., which is the biggest financial contributor to UN peacekeeping operations, will expand its support. And the International Organization for Migration says more than 522,000 people have crossed the sea to reach Europe.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Uganda, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the Associated Press Wire Service says the transitional president of the Central African Republic is returning home from the UN. President Catherine Samba Panza has been attending the UN General Assembly in New York. She returns home to help calm violence, which has killed 42 people since last weekend. Her return to Bangui also follows Monday's escape of 500 prisoners. Last night, AFP says militia fighters looted the offices of international aid organizations. President Samba Panza has called for citizens to exercise restraint and for the United Nations peacekeepers to protect civilians and help track down those behind the conflict. The violence began after the death of a Muslim man near a mosque in the capital last weekend. Muslim militias responded by attacking a Christian neighborhood. Fighting began 2 years ago with the overthrow of long-ruling president. Tens of thousands of Muslims have fled the fighting.
UN agencies are warning of a resurgence in widespread ethnic and religious fighting in Central African Republic following the recent outbreak of fighting, which has left dozens dead and scores injured in the capital, Bangui. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United Nations reports clashes and reprisal attacks involving rival militias since Saturday have killed at least 37 people and injured more than 100 others in Central African Republic. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is strongly condemning the violence that was triggered by the murder of a young Muslim man Saturday in Bangui. He is also expressing deep concern over the escape of more than 500 prisoners Monday from Bangui's main prison, noting the threat to civilians. Meanwhile, UN troops have been deployed to restore order in the city. UN Refugee Agency spokesman Leo Dobbs says the situation remains tense with shooting in central Bangui.
We fear that the violence that we're seeing in Bangui is a return to the dark days of late 2013 and 2014, when thousands were killed and tens of thousands had to flee their homes. We're particularly concerned about getting access to the thousands of people who have fled their homes since Saturday.
Presidential elections are scheduled for October 18th, but it is widely expected they will be postponed. Interim President Catherine Samba Panza cut short her trip to the UN General Assembly in New York so she could return to Bangui to deal with the crisis. The UNHCR estimates at least 27,400 people have been displaced. UN agencies say people displaced by the violence are in urgent need of basic aid. Several international organizations, including the UNHCR and International Organization for Migration, have had their compounds looted. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
President Obama yesterday chaired the UN Leadership Summit on Peacekeeping. He announced that more than 50 countries have pledged more than 30,000 peacekeepers. They also pledged helicopters, medical teams, and new technology to try to deal with the roadside bombs.
The word peacekeeping does not appear in the Charter of the United Nations. But for the past seven decades, our collective ability to maintain international peace and security has often depended on the willingness of courageous UN peacekeepers to put their lives on the line in war-torn countries of the world. Over the years, from El Salvador to Namibia, from Liberia to Timor-Leste, more than 1 million men and women in blue helmets have prevented violence and preserved peace. They have saved lives. They've given societies a chance to rebuild. Through bitter experience in places like Bosnia and Rwanda, we've learned painful lessons and we've worked to do better.
Mr. Obama said currently there are more than 100,000 troops and police deployed around the world. More than 3,300 peacekeepers have died in the line of duty over the past decades.
We know that peace operations are not the solution to every problem, but they do remain one of the world's most important tools to address armed conflict. And I called for this summit because UN peacekeeping operations are experiencing unprecedented strains. Old challenges persist. Too few nations bear a disproportionate burden of providing troops, which is unsustainable. Atop this, we've seen new challenges. More armed conflicts, more instability driven by terrorism and violent extremism, and more refugees. As a consequence, peacekeepers head into more difficult and deadlier conflicts. They're given ambitious mandates and charged with increasingly dangerous and complex missions. Put simply, the supply of well-trained, well-equipped peacekeepers can't keep up with the growing demand. So we are here today, together, to strengthen and reform UN peacekeeping because our common security demands it.
The U.S. is the biggest financial contributor to UN peacekeeping operations, and President Obama announced expanded support. It would double U.S. military officers serving in peacekeeping operations and provide greater logistical support.
When there is an urgent need and we're uniquely positioned to help, we'll undertake engineering projects like building airfields and base camps for new missions. And we'll step up our efforts to help build the UN's capacity, from identifying state-of-the-art technology to offering training to protection against IEDs. And together, there's much more we need to do together.
He said UN peacekeepers must do more to protect innocent civilians.
For innocent people caught in the crossfire in places like South Sudan, the actions of UN peacekeepers can mean the difference between life and death. At the same time, we have to candidly acknowledge that abuse by peacekeepers has to end. I want to be very clear. The overwhelming number of peacekeepers serve with honor and decency in extraordinarily difficult situations. But we have seen some appalling cases of peacekeepers abusing civilians, including rape and sexual assault, and that is totally unacceptable. It's an affront to human decency. It undermines the core mission because it erodes trust with communities. It has a corrosive effect on global confidence in peacekeeping itself. Mr. Secretary General, we commend you for leading on this issue and insisting on accountability. And we know you cannot solve this problem alone. As leaders and as an international community, we have to insist on zero tolerance for abuse. Zero.
Mr. Obama said UN peacekeeping operations must be reformed and modernized, adding that women should play a greater role. He said the goal is to make every new peace operation more efficient and more effective than the last.
Former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba, who already faces war crime charges at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, is on trial again. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris. This time, Bemba and his associates are accused of corrupting witnesses and interfering with justice.
While the chamber is mindful of the rights of the parties to seek legal remedy under Article 8...
Jean-Pierre Bemba and four of his associates appeared grim as they listened to the charges read against them at the International Criminal Court on Tuesday. All five are accused of trying to influence the outcome of Bemba's first trial at the ICC. Also facing accusations in this second trial are two members of Bemba's initial defense team, including his lawyer, Amy Kilolo, along with a close associate and a trial witness. Prosecutors claim the men plotted to ensure Bemba's acquittal in his initial trial and that they have witness accounts and intercepted phone messages to prove it. At stake, Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said in her opening remarks, are the very principles of fairness and justice the court is tasked to protect.
We will demonstrate on the strength of our evidence how the accused engaged in a scheme to corruptly influence witnesses, to bribe them, to encourage or induce their false testimony, to coach their evidence illicitly, and to present that false evidence to a chamber of this court.
Jean-Pierre Bemba, a, au sens de l'article 70.1c.
All five men are pleading not guilty. They say the money involved was to help cover witnesses' expenses. If found guilty, they face fines and up to 5 years in prison. A former vice president in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Bemba already faces war crimes and crimes against humanity charges at the ICC for atrocities committed by his private army in Central African Republic more than a decade ago. That trial concluded last November, and a verdict is expected later this year. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The Associated Press Wire Service says there's concern in Burundi over the possible defection of a commander in an elite infantry unit. Major Emmanuel Ndeyekeza failed to show up to work yesterday. A military spokesman says he had not requested leave. His absence would be considered a defection if he goes missing for 8 days. Ndeyekeza is the deputy commandant of Camp Muha, a military unit south of the capital. The country has been tense since its long-serving president, Pierre Nkurunziza, announced he'd run for another term. In July, he was reelected in a campaign boycotted by most of the opposition. Yesterday, the United Nations expressed concern about arrests, detentions, and unexplained killings in Burundi.
In related news, the European Union announced limited sanctions against four high-ranking government officials. The move is in protest against Nkurunziza's failure to adhere to presidential term limits and his government's crackdown on political and individual freedoms. The four individuals who will be affected by travel bans and asset freezes have not yet been named. EU ambassadors agreed last weekend to impose the sanctions. They are expected to be formally adopted Thursday and take effect by the end of the week. Reuters says action will not be taken against the president. Its diplomatic sources say they want to keep channels open for dialogue. The new agency says the EU is also debating the potential suspension of trade preferences, a move that some diplomats fear could harm the general population. The United States has also imposed visa bans on some Burundian officials.
A record number of migrants and refugees have now crossed the Mediterranean. The International Organization for Migration says more than 522,000 people have crossed the sea to reach Europe. About 388,000 have entered through Greece, most of them Syrians. Nearly 2,900 people have died crossing the Mediterranean. Most of the victims had tried to reach Italy from North Africa. French President François Hollande says Europe was too slow to respond to the crises in Syria and Iraq. He told a trade union meeting today that Europe should integrate hundreds of thousands of refugees. Mr. Hollande said Europeans wrongly believe the tragedies in the Middle East had no consequences for them.
Meanwhile, Croatia's Prime Minister Zoran Milanovic says he will not discuss the crisis with his Hungarian counterpart, Viktor Orban. The Croatian leader describes Hungary's border fence as a threat and questions whether the two countries have the same values. Also, Germany has approved new, tougher rules affecting migrants and refugees. Up to 10,000 people are arriving in Germany each day. The country's interior minister says Germany will only accept those fleeing war and will not give asylum to economic migrants. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wahib, and at 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. UN agencies are warning of a resurgence in widespread ethnic and religious fighting in the Central African Republic. The U.S. is the biggest financial contributor to UN peacekeeping operations, and President Obama announced expanded support. And the International Organization for Migration says more than 522,000 people have crossed the sea to reach Europe. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
According to the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition, or GAIN, over 2 billion people lack the essential vitamins and nutrients they need to grow and live healthy lives. It says the lack of iron, iodine, folic acid, vitamins A and D, and other so-called micronutrients is a major contributor to maternal and infant mortality and many lifelong physical and mental disabilities. This week, VOA's Adam Phillips attended a conference in New York where leaders from the United Nations, National Health Ministries, business NGOs, and science met to improve nutrition worldwide.
Among those who attended the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition Conference was Sean Baker, Nutrition Director for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which has contributed millions of dollars to the cause.
Undernutrition is the attributable cause of 45% of all child deaths, meaning if those kids had had good nutrition, they would not have died. Even beyond that, we know that if kids don't get the right nutrition, they're not set up to succeed in life. They don't have optimal cognitive development and physical development. We dream that all kids will survive, but we also want all kids to thrive and be able to have an equal opportunity in life, and nutrition is essential to both of those.
He says historically, there's been a lack of clarity and harmony among the responsible players.
Because is it really the Ministry of Health? Is it the Ministry of Industry? Is it the private sector food companies? And so who's responsible? It falls between the cracks. And unless you actually bring people together and clear define what are the rules of the game, who's responsible for what, and then hold them accountable for it, you can't have action because no one sector, no one government department can do it alone.
Baker says his foundation helps create needed partnerships.
So we have funded partners that play catalytic roles, such as the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition. We engage directly in policy dialogue with other donors, with government organizations. We also do some upstream research to say, well, yes, we do have good tools now, but are there also technological breakthroughs where we can make these nutrients we put into foodstuffs better?
Mark Van Ameriken is executive director of the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition. He says nutrition was a major part of the Millennium Development Goals, or MDGs, that expired this year. The Sustainability Development Goals that have replaced them also put nutrition front and center.
We learned a lot during the Millennium Development Goals, what works, what doesn't work. I think now people are really impatient to say, let's take a lot of these to scale and let's make them work and let's deal with the issues from accountability, from conflicts of interest, from funding, all these things that we know we've learned about. But secondly, things like staple food fortification is already reaching billions of people, whether you're in Tanzania, Uganda, whether you're in South Africa, whether you're in Nigeria. more and more people who are eating food in markets and micronutrients are being added into those.
Van American believes that fortifying foods in Africa, as richly as they are in the West, is within easy reach.
More than half the African countries have started to do that over the last 10 years. We can finish the job on things like iodine deficiency. You know, you don't see goiter hardly anymore in Africa today. You know, vitamin A deficiency, iron deficiency, all of these things that in rich countries are fixed by the food system. Countries in Africa need this, and it's really a big part of being a productive and growing economy that, you know, if your population are all anemic and they have no energy, how are they going to be productive?
Van American says that food advocates once focused on the amount of food people ate rather than the nutrients in that food.
Poor people need to have access to a diverse and healthy diet. And now we know how important that is, you know. Whereas before we said, oh, you fill the stomach, you're healthy. But that's not the case. You could be eating all that maize meal and you'll still have a stunted child who won't perform well and who will be handicapped their whole life. So it's the quality, not just the quantity. That's the reality.
It's a reality that the food industry is well suited to address, according to Monica Musonda. She's founder and chief executive of Zambia-based Java Foods.
Consumers buy what's in front of them. So we found in Africa the issue around affordable nutrition was availability. So if it's not in front of them and it wasn't affordable, they'll buy what was available. And also that you understand what it is. I think for us as producers is making it aspirational and marketing it correctly. Why should you be eating nutritious foods? Nobody wants to be unhealthy, and everyone wants the best for their child.
And this helps in business sense, too. It's not just a matter of an altruistic motivation.
No, we're here because our shareholders are demanding that we make income, of course, but also we can do it socially responsibly, right? It doesn't mean that nutrition is expensive. So new technologies and new ways to distribute foods and get the message out means that everyone can be happy.
Musonda adds that business leaders also seek to grow and distribute nutritious food in environmentally sustainable ways. That means, for example, using renewable energy on farms and enriching local products that people already enjoy instead of shipping them long distances. Enriching food is also economical in another way. Micronutrients are often government subsidized, and where they are not, companies can pass the cost of those ingredients on to consumers at a low cost. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
A South African anti-poaching unit, made up mostly of women, has won a top United Nations environmental award, the Champions of the Earth Prize. The Black Mambasa are made up of 23 women and 2 men who help patrol the Baluli Nature Reserve. It shares an unfenced border with Kruger National Park, a common target for poachers. The Associated Press says Black Mambas has helped arrest 6 poachers and removed 1,000 traps set to capture wild animals. The UN says the team walks up to 20 kilometers a day, checking for poachers, trails, and camps. It also works to discourage poor communities in the area from working with poachers. This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joburg.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. UN agencies warn of a resurgence in widespread ethnic and religious fighting in Central African Republic. The U.S. is the biggest financial contributor to UN peacekeeping operations, and President Obama announces expanded support. And the International Organization for Migration says more than 522,000 people have crossed the sea to reach Europe. Coming up, we'll have music from Uganda, and in our feature segment, we'll find out about a major lack of resources at a free inpatient rehabilitation center in Malawi. I'm Kim Lewis with Yeheya Swuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. And happy Tuesday, Sunny.
Happy Tuesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you are kicking off today with African football.
Kim, joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is David Legg, our African football guru. Good evening, David.
Thank you, Sunny.
David, let's kick off in Montreal, Canada, where Ivorian football star Didier Drogba, you might say he's making a big impact for the Montreal Impact in his inaugural Major League Soccer season. Drogba had 2 goals over the weekend. He now has 7 goals in 6 matches for the Impact. Your reaction, David, on Drogba's performance so far?
Oh, great stuff, Sonny. As they say, form is temporary, class is permanent. And that's what Didier Drogba is. He's a class act. He could still, Sonny, be playing in the English Premier League. I'm sure there's quite a few clubs that would happily have said, please come and join us when he was freed by Chelsea. The thing about Drogba is all along he's looked after himself very well. He's in very, very good shape. When he left Chelsea the first time, I believe he himself would now admit he made a mistake by going to China. I think the standard of football there was just not high enough for him. He then moved on to Turkey, where he did extremely well. He went back to Chelsea. And now, Montreal Impact, the cliche sticks out a mile, doesn't it? He's making quite an impact there. 7 goals in 6 games, and there's a lot of MLS defenders that are getting dizzy spells trying to stop this man. And not only, Sonny, could he be playing in the English Premier League, but also he could, if he wanted to, I believe, be back in the Ivorian national team. Didier Drogba is a great man, and he's a great ambassador for African football.
David, let's turn to Europe now. And how about a look at some recent African goal-scoring highlights?
I normally start with the English Premier League, but I'm going to break that rule this time and pay tribute to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. He plays for Borussia Dortmund in the German Bundesliga, because what he's doing is nothing less than amazing. And I think it's going to shoot him up the ladder into a real contender for the 2015 African Footballer of the Year award. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who plays for Gabon, has now scored in 7 consecutive matches since the German Bundesliga started. And he has scored 9 goals. And yet, incredibly, he's not the top goal scorer. That is Thomas Müller of Bayern Munich with 10 goals. But Aubameyang's consistently is just remarkable. The German Bundesliga is, you can argue, the 4th or 5th best league in Europe. Right at the top, I think you've got the English Premier League, the Spanish La Liga, and the Italian Serie A. And then you really have the French Ligue 1 and the Bundesliga. So it is a top league. And to score on 7 consecutive weekends, Sonny, nothing less than amazing. And I think this is good because for some time now, I've been saying to myself, who is going to challenge Yaya Toure for the African Footballer of the Year? Just to quickly remind our listeners to the Sunny Side of Sport, Yaya Toure has created a record. He has won the African Footballer of the Year for the last four occasions. Nobody else, not even the great Samuel Eto'o of Cameroon, has achieved that. I'm not the only person, I'm sure, who is saying to themselves, who is going to take over from Yaya Touré? Well, now I think, Sonny, we've got a real contender, and that's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. He wasn't the only African sharpshooter doing well in Europe, though. In the English Premier League, no less than four Senegalese scored goals at the weekend. Mama Biram Diouf of Stoke City scored the winner in the 2-1 victory over Bournemouth. We then had Chikou Kouyaté. He scored for West Ham United. And so did his Senegalese teammate, Diafra Sakho. Both goals coming in a 2-2 draw against Norwich City. And then a name that crops up regularly on The Voice of America, Sadio Mane of Southampton. He scored in a 3-1 victory over Swansea City. And the African goal charge in England did not stop there, because Rudy Gestede, he plays for Benin, he scored a brace for Aston Villa, but unfortunately it wasn't enough. They went down 3-2 at Liverpool. Suddenly on to Italy and more African goals. Mohamed Salah, an Egyptian, and Gervinho, who has recently been struggling. He's, of course, the dreadlocked Ivorian winger who also plays for Roma. Both Salah and Gervinho were on target as Roma won by 5-1. And Emmanuel Badu, the Ghanaian who plays for Udinese, he scored the equaliser and then created the winner for Udinese in a 2-1 victory over Bologna. Carlos Kameni, playing for Malaga in Spain, did not score a goal, but he prevented Real Madrid scoring any at the Santiago Bernabeu. And that is a rare feat indeed. Malaga coming away with a 0-0 draw. So fantastic weekend, Sonny, for Africans across Europe. And the man that really stands out, and we're going to be monitoring very closely for the Voice of America,
Voice of America,
is Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. How much longer can he continue this amazing goal streak? It's now 7 matches that he has scored in.
How about a sunny side of sports shout out for Polish striker Robert Lewandowski? 5 goals in 1 match. Your reaction to that outburst, David?
Amazing, Sonny. Amazing for Aubameyang and amazing for Lewandowski. The Bundesliga is a top-class league. I mean, there are some leagues in Europe where maybe scoring 5 goals would be a good achievement, but not a great one. But when you score 5 goals in the Bundesliga, that is a great achievement. And we're certainly going to monitor the fortunes of him and Aubameyang in the coming weeks, because they're neck and neck in that goal scorers charts early in the Bundesliga season.
David, let's stand up for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and all the African goal scorers over the weekend.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to The Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on The Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
In African athletics, the Kenyan flag waved high in Germany's capital, Berlin, on Sunday. Eliud Kipchoge and Gladys Chirono swept the men's and women's titles for Kenya in the 42nd BMW Berlin Marathon. Kipchoge clocked a personal best 2 hours and 4 minutes even, and Chirono also set a personal best, winning the women's race in 2 hours, 19 minutes, and 25 seconds. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Gladys Chirono after her triumph in Berlin. Here's Andy.
Gladys, what a great day. You must be delighted. Did you expect such a result?
Yes, I was expecting to run under 220 because what I have done, I have trained very, very well, and everything was so good.
One of your training partners back in Kenya is Mary Kaitani, the African record holder. She's run 2:18. There'll be some friendly conversation, I think, that you're almost alongside her now.
Yes, I'm happy for that. The training partners for their support, so I'm happy for them.
This is only your second marathon. Of course, we've got the Rio Olympics next year. Are your eyes going to be on qualifying for Kenya and running the Olympic marathon?
Yes, if I will be selected to be among those who will be going, I'll be happy for that.
You've broken 2:20 in only your second marathon. Is the next target, whenever you run your next, sub 2:19?
Yes, so I hope so. If everything goes well, I will run.
Well, good luck with that, and also with that Olympic marathon dream in Rio. Gladys Chirono, the champion in the women's race in Berlin. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Once again, those addresses, my Facebook address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle, @VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page today, Tuesday, you'll see a photo of all-star point guard John Wall of the Washington Wizards, my favorite National Basketball Association club. Wall and the Magical Wizards held their annual media day on Monday, and so did quite a few other NBA clubs. The 30 NBA clubs, including the defending champion Golden State Warriors, are opening their preseason training camps this week. And now a few notes from those training camps. Los Angeles Lakers star Kobe Bryant hasn't decided whether his 20th season with the Los Angeles Lakers will be his last. Kobe says he thought about it a lot, retiring during the offseason, but for now he wants to help the Lakers bounce back from the worst season in the club's proud history. The 37-year-old Bryant reported to his 20th training camp with the Lakers on Monday. Kobe's past three seasons ended early because of injuries, and he's played in only 41 games the past 2 years. Meanwhile, Paul George has lofty goals for himself and the Indiana Pacers this coming NBA season. The two-time NBA All-Star says he's aiming to win the MVP award this season, and he believes Indiana can be a top three team in the Eastern Conference. I mentioned how the Lakers are trying to bounce back. Well, so is Paul George. He had a heartbreaking end to his season last year when he broke his right leg and he missed 76 games. So we hope Paul George will be healthy this upcoming NBA season. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yehaeus Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Coming up, a decision by Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court. And next, major lack of resources at a free inpatient rehabilitation center in Malawi. But for some music, it is Blue 3 of Uganda with Together.
Let's get together, maybe run away together. You and I can make this happen if we try.
Come on, say.
Let's get together, maybe run city. Tell me what kind of drink, girl, you are sipping. When you look closely, you look good in a mini. We have a lot of girls now, pressure in the mind. Now that I found you, me can't change the plan. Let me be the one to give you the ring. Ready, let it be you to give me the love that I need. You know what I mean. Girl, where you in on me, wanting something me, you know. Let me be the one to take you over Israel, yeah.
Of Uganda put together.
Well, Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court has declared as unconstitutional a section of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act that gave prosecutors the power to overrule judges and magistrates when they had freed suspects on bail. Thomas Chirapasi has details from Harare.
The full bench of the Constitutional Court ruled that Section 121 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act violated the constitutional rights of suspects who would have been freed on bail. The Act allowed prosecutors to invoke the section, overriding decisions of judges and magistrates that would result in suspects who would have been granted bail to remain behind bars for at least 7 days to give the state a chance to appeal the judge's decision. Chief Justice Godfrey Chijikausiku said the full bench of the Constitutional Court was unanimous in declaring the section unconstitutional. The ruling followed an application filed by MDCT activist Fanny Okamurendo and three others following their arrest in 2013 for allegedly tearing posters in Chitungwiza bearing the faces of President Robert Mugabe and the late retired Army General Solomon Mujuru, one of the applicant's lawyers. Kudzai Kadzere of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights confirmed the court's ruling, describing it as landmark. Kadzere told VOA Studio 7 that the effect of the ruling is that from today onwards, no suspects would continue to be incarcerated if they are freed by the courts.
We're happy that with the immediate effect that section is no longer operational, and we note with pleasure that it is a section that has previously been used and abused by the state, particularly targeting those in opposition, as well as several other innocent civilian individuals who have been locked up unnecessarily even after having been granted bail by a magistrate.
Morgan Komichi, the deputy chairperson of the MDC formation led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, said his party welcomed the court's decision to strike the section of the country's statutes, saying that several members of his party have fallen victim to the unconstitutional provision of the law. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chirapasi.
In Malawi, a study by University of Maryland School of Medicine researcher has found major lack of resources for patients at the country's only free inpatient rehabilitation center. VOA's Lamek Masina visited the facility in Blantyre and has this report.
A 20-year-old Stella Bottoman suffered a general body weakness in January, 2 weeks before she graduated as a Malawi prison warden.
That was on 30 January when I just wake up in the morning and I was not able to wake up myself, to stand. I was able to use my hands. Everything was down, like a general body weakness.
Bottoman says the condition dashed her hope of getting employment. But she says a ray of hope came when doctors at Zomba Central Hospital recommended her for physical therapy at Kajera Rehabilitation Center in Blanta.
I came here on 9 April. That time I was not able to do anything by myself. But now there are much improvement because at the meantime I'm able to walk, at least with a walker, the starting point of walking here.
Eunice Tekere is another patient admitted at the center from Southern District of Cholo. She had been paralyzed by a stroke. She is now feeling well and is waiting for a word from doctors as to when to return home. Hetekere and Bottoman are just two of thousands of patients who have benefited from the rehabilitation services offered at the center, which opened in 1995. It offers free services to individuals with stroke, spinal cord injury, and similar conditions. However, a recent study by the University of Maryland School of Medicine researcher Dr. Leslie Griegman says despite the good work, inadequate funding is preventing the center from operating more effectively. General Manager for the Rehabilitation Center, Sidney Ndembe, confirms the study findings.
This place is partially funded by government. But you know what government is like. Government has got too many commitments. Say, who would need something like at this? 144 million for a year, but they give you 90 million.
That lack of money also means a lack of equipment needed by physiotherapists like Veronica Mwowo. She works in the center's gym.
When we are doing strength and exercise, we need to use equipment. Some of them we have, but they are not enough, depending on the number of therapists which we have. For instance, here in this gym, we are almost 8, and maybe some of the equipment is just only 1. So 8 therapists fighting for 1 equipment.
The study, which was recently published in the Journal of Global Health, also said there are essentially no follow-up services for patients after they return to their families, homes, and communities. It says this has resulted in the discharged patients face a range of obstacles that make it harder to find employment or move freely throughout society. For example, some patients need home visits by a physical therapist or disability-friendly draw-in trances, chairs, and walking aids. Isaac Chabwiteka is the head of inpatient section at the center.
Before the patient is being discharged, we didn't need to visit the place where he stays so that when he goes home, he doesn't have another stress. That used to happen before, but currently because of problems with funding.
The study says the center should still find ways to improve on follow-up care. Chabwiteka also says the facility has only 40 beds, not enough for increasing number of patients which seek helping from the facility.
We end up telling them to wait. By telling them to wait, we have a problem in such a way that they develop other complications instead of just coming here straight. And we are really looking for assistance such as increasing the bed capacity, whereby we need to increase the space for the beds as well as the gym.
But despite the challenges, Ndembe says he foresees things changing for the better, citing a number of well-wishers he says are showing interest to start contributing towards the noble duty the organization is doing in the country. Already some have built bathrooms and provided food for the center. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, is the U.S. government agency primarily responsible for administering civilian foreign aid. Its mission is to partner to end extreme poverty and to promote resilient, democratic societies while advancing the security and prosperity of the United States. Why, then, does so much of USAID's work revolve around empowering women and girls? According to the World Bank, countries with greater gender equality are more prosperous and competitive. In order to end extreme poverty, feed the planet, and build vibrant economies, women and girls must gain access to capital, land, markets, training, education, and leadership opportunities, said USAID Senior Coordinator for Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment, Susan Markham. Although 40% of the world's farmers are women, anywhere from 3 to 20% are landholders. In Africa, women own only 10% of all businesses and just 8% of small and medium businesses in South Asia. Women, Ms. Markham said, hold fewer assets, earn less, own a fraction of the world's enterprises, and are often denied more opportunities than men, even when they have the same or higher level of education. That's why USAID is working to ensure all of its programs address the unique perspective and development needs of women and girls. In more than 80 countries, it runs initiatives focused exclusively on advancing gender equality. We know that women are key drivers of economic growth, said Senior Coordinator Susan Markham. That's why the United States is partnering with Japan to empower women and girls in Afghanistan through a program called PROMOTE. PROMOTE is USAID's largest women's empowerment program ever. The program supports Afghan women to become leaders in politics, the private sector, and civil society. For more than 50 years, USAID has been a leader in empowering women and girls globally because the evidence shows that investing in women and girls accelerates progress in every area. From ending extreme poverty to countering violent extremism, women are not only impacted by these issues, they are invaluable and have knowledge on how to solve them, said Senior Coordinator Markham. Empowering women is the smartest investment we can make.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
Hello, I'm Lenore Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.